Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the DSM's conference call on the full year results of 2017. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in listen-only mode. And after the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To register for questions, you may dial star 1 at any time. If any participant has difficulty hearing the conference, please press 00 on your push-button phone. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Huizing. Go ahead, please, sir.
Thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to this conference call on our full year results that we published earlier this morning. I'm sitting here with Mr. Feike Sijbesma, CEO and Chairman of the DSM Managing Board, and Mrs. Geraldine Matchett, Chief Financial Officer and Member of the DSM Managing Board. They will elaborate on the results and after that answer your questions. As a reminder, today's presentation may contain forward-looking statements. In that regard, I would like to direct you to the disclaimers about forward-looking statements as published in the press release. And with that out of the way, I can hand over to Mrs. Matchett. Geraldine, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this call on DSM's full year results 2017. On this call, I will walk you through some of the key slides of our investor presentation that we published this morning with the press release, and after that, we'll open the line for some Q&A. Let me start first with the financial highlights on page 2. As you can see from this summary, DSM delivered a strong financial results in 2017, significantly ahead of the financial targets set in our strategy. This was achieved through the continued focus on driving above-market sales growth, both in nutrition and in materials, as well as a persistent drive to deliver on our cost savings and efficiency improvement programs. Sales for the year closed at $8,632,000,000, an increase of 9% versus 2016. This increase relates fully to organic growth at 9%, supported by a strong volume growth of 7%, clearly above market. Well, I will come back on the specifics in a little while. In short, all businesses contributed to this strong growth. In terms of our earnings, our adjusted EBITDA closed at $1,445,000,000, representing a 15% increase over prior year, well ahead of the high single-digit growth target originally set in our strategy 2018. This 15% increase relates, of course, to the strong top line, as well as our cost reduction and efficiency improvement programs, which progress well and are on track to deliver the targeted benefits. Our adjusted net profit for the year was up 36% to $706 million, while the total net profit reached $1,781,000,000 and includes the gain on disposal of Patheon in Q3 of $1,250,000,000. Also worth highlighting, our return on capital employed, ROCE, closed at 12.3% for 2017, up from 10.4% in prior year. Finally, regarding the dividend, our policy is to provide a stable and preferably rising dividend. Reflecting our confidence in the financial performance of our company, we propose an increase to increase the dividend from €1.75 to €1.85 per ordinary share. As for the last bullet on this slide, our outlook, I will come back to this at the end and go first through some of the key slides on our performance by business in 2017. Starting with our nutrition business, let's go to page 10. In 2017, nutrition again outperformed its aspiration as outlined in our strategy 2018, with full-year sales increasing 8% organically, clearly above market, and reflecting the successful implementation of our growth initiatives in both animal and human nutrition. The nutrition improvement programs covering the cost reductions as well as operational excellence further helped grow our adjusted EBITDA that closed 13% up over prior year, repeating the excellent EBITDA growth performance that was achieved already in 2016 with a similar 13% EBITDA growth. Nutrition's adjusted EBITDA margin for 2017 increased to 18.9%, a further step up from the 18% margin achieved in 2016. Now, moving more specifically to animal nutrition, let me go to page 11. For animal nutrition, The full year 2017 sales were exceptionally strong, with an 11% organic growth driven by 9% volume, all but against somewhat easy comparative figures. The business continued to benefit from its strategy of addressing a wide range of species, as well as from the diversified geographical presence, covering all the major growth areas in the world, and its strong forward integrated premix position. Markets in animal feed were favorable and supportive in 2017. Prices were up 2% above 2016, owing to the higher premix and vitamin prices. Regarding Q4 more specifically, it's good to point out that our organic growth in animal nutrition was exceptionally high at 18%. The 12% volume growth against undemanding comparative figures resulted mainly from a combination of three factors. Firstly, very strong sales in Brazil. This was due to the continued high demand for export beef, but also accentuated by additional sales due to an ERP system change that we did in our Tortuga business early this year in January 2018. Secondly, strong premix sales in all regions, reflecting continued strong global demand. And lastly, higher vitamin sales resulting from a supply shortage in vitamin E and vitamin A following outages at some large European producers. This led to additional deliveries to existing contracted premix customers, as well as emergency spot business with other accounts. The positive 6% pricing effect in Q4 resulted largely from a better mix driven by exceptionally strong premix and Tortuga sales, and from the somewhat higher vitamin A and vitamin E prices towards the end of the quarter related to emergency spot business. Now, moving to human nutrition on page 12. In human nutrition, full year 2017 sales were up 6%, reflecting a 7% organic growth and a small 1% foreign exchange headwind. The business maintained its very positive momentum on the back of an already significant step up achieved in 2016, and this was confirmed by 6% volumes growth. While we continued to see ongoing softness in some of the end market segments, the growth initiatives launched as part of our Strategy 2018 have been supporting this solid result. In the food and beverage market, tailored premixes performed well. In dietary supplements, growth was driven by sales excellence programs, the introduction of new multivitamins and omega-3 solutions. And in eye health, we continued double-digit growth, and it was achieved in part thanks to the recent expansion into China. Combined, these three businesses are moving us closer to the customer, with now more than 40% of our human nutrition sales coming from customer nutrient premixes, retail-ready solutions, and the iHealth B2B products. As for the early life nutrition, this business remained a solid performer as well, despite the volatility in China linked to the new regulations. Finally, prices were overall stable, with higher pricing in the advanced formulation and premix, compensating the somewhat lower contractual prices in early life nutrition. Now from the materials businesses, let's move to page 16. Our materials business delivered another very strong year, continuing its excellent progress since the start of Strategy 2018. The silent transformation of the materials portfolio, focusing on specialty products, provides a clear framework to outpace market growth and supported the financial performance again in 2017. Driven by demand for more sustainable, innovative, lightweight, environmentally friendlier, safer, and higher performing solutions, sales for the full year 2017 grew by 12%, with this strong top line growth being spurred in particular by the specialties. All three businesses in materials delivered a double-digit organic growth, resulting in a 13% organic growth overall, of which 7% was volume driven. As for the 6% price effect, this reflected the increased input cost environment. Regarding profitability, in 2017, The adjusted EBITDA increased by 12% versus prior, driven by the higher volumes. The adjusted EBITDA margin was stable at 17.3%, as pricing and group-wide cost savings and efficiency improvement programs offset the higher input costs and negative foreign exchange. Finally, also very much worthwhile highlighting is the return on capital employed that increased once again this year and reached for the first time 20%. All these great achievements demonstrate the improvements made in the quality of returns of our materials business over recent years. Now moving to our cash generation briefly, let's go to page 21. As shown here, our cash flow from operating activities amounted to 996 million in 2017, which is slightly below prior year. Due to our strong organic growth, the cash out on OWC amounted to 195 million, although in absolute terms it remained stable, as the increase related to the growth was offset by the weakening of the US dollar and the Swiss franc versus the euro. In percentage terms, our OWC to sales ratios improved from 23.9% at the end of 2016 to 22.3% end of 2017. Now, if we look at it for total working capital, it ended the year at 1.5 billion, broadly stable versus last year, and in percentage of sales, closed at 17.2%, an improvement of 1.2% compared to year-end 2016, and well below our aspiration level of lower than 20%. Net debt closed at 742 million compared to 2.07 billion at the end of 2016. This decrease was mainly due to the proceeds received from the sale of our shares in Patheon of 1.535 million. And finally, the reported effective tax rate for 2017 was 16.8% compared to 18.3% in 2016. This decrease was mainly due to a one-time benefit from the U.S. tax reform. Ongoing, this tax reform, which by the way combines both the decrease in U.S. federal tax rate from 35% to 21%, but also the broadening of the tax base, will have a net positive effect of approximately 1%. Overall, however, we expect the group effective tax rate to remain broadly within the guided 18 to 20% range. Now, before moving to 2018, let me quickly provide you with a status update on the other actions regarding Strategy 2018. And for this, let me go to page 25. As you can see in this summary page, in 2017, we delivered well ahead of our original ambitions in the second year in a row. We have outpaced the market growth in 2016 and 2017 and expect to continue to do so in 2018. Our well-identified cost reduction and improvement programs continue to progress as planned. At the end of 2017, DSM achieved cumulative cost savings run rate of about 195 million, and at the end of 2018, we expect to achieve cumulative saving run rates in the brackets of 270 to 280 million for the total of the program. In addition, besides stepping up the financial performance of the DSM's businesses, our Strategy 2018 comprises additional elements aimed at future-proofing the company, providing a strong and sustainable basis for long-term value creation for all of our stakeholders, on which you can find more information and illustrative examples in our press release. Now, let me close with a few words on our outlook for 2018. And for this, let's move to page 27. In 2018, we will continue to focus on improving our operational and financial performance through our own efforts. Key to this are the growth initiatives, together with the completion of our cost savings and efficiency improvement programs. This will enable us, as this slide shows, and it's a slide that we used actually in our Capital Markets Day in autumn last year, to continue to grow volumes above market in 2018 and to deliver on our targets. In addition, there are two other factors in 2018 that I want to highlight, and I will start with the less favorable factor, foreign exchange. It will not be a surprise to you that we expect a substantial negative effect for the year based on current rates developments, especially the strengthening of the euro against the dollar and several other currencies. For 2018, at current rates, this will mean an expected negative impact of around 80 million euros versus last year. The other important factor for 2018 is the current pricing environment for vitamins, of which part is temporary in nature. This positive pricing environment comes from three elements. First, we are achieving a favorable trend through our own growth initiatives, which do not only result in volume growth, but also in favorable pricing. Secondly, pricing of some ingredients, like vitamin C, is supported currently by supplied restrictions due to the enforcement of environmental regulations in China, the blue sky policies, an event which in part could result in structurally higher cost positions of Chinese-based producers. And thirdly, the current market for vitamin E and for vitamin A is being impacted by exceptional market conditions caused by outages at competitors. This will provide a temporary benefit to our financial results. The impact of the current pricing environment is expected to be clearly above 100 million in 2018, heavily weighted towards the first half of the year. This brings me to our outlook 2018, as stated in the press release, which reads, DSM expects to deliver full-year 2018 results above the targets set in Strategy 2018, with an adjusted EBITDA growth somewhat up from the high single digit to double digit, and a ROCE growth above 100 basis points. The expected substantial negative foreign exchange effect, based on current rates, will be more than offset by a positive pricing environment in nutrition, part of which is temporary in nature and expected to be heavily weighted towards the first half of the year. And with this, I would like to open the floor for questions. Operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that said, we will start the question and answer session now. If you have a question, please press star one. So star one for your question or remark. Go ahead, please. The first question is coming from Mr. Andrew Stott, UBS. Go ahead, please.
Oh, good morning, everybody. I had a couple of questions. First of all, just picking up, Geraldine, on your last comment on pricing. So impact of pricing environment, you said, would be clearly above 100 million, which on my math is just less than 2% for pricing for this year. I mean, given you did 4 in Q4, and I get the point that a certain competitor will be back online probably Q2. Is that a first snap conservative judgment? That's the first question. And then secondly, just trying to get to the bottom of your leverage in Q4. If I look at nutrition specifically, your drop through on sales in Q4 was actually lower than the first 9 months, and yet pricing was higher. So I just wonder if you could square that circle. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Andrew. So maybe let me come back and really dissect a bit the pricing movements. And I think it's important to really realize that there are three pieces going on here at the same time. On the one hand, of course, what we've been doing is gradually move our portfolio, et cetera, and gain pricing out of our own steam, regardless of, market disruptions. Now, on top of that, what we're seeing is that there are some disruptions, particularly in China, relating to the environmental regulation implementation that, you've all heard about, the famous sort of blue sky policies. And that is creating some supply disruption in this particular case, Vitamin C is a relevant example. And then a particular competitor has indeed caused more disruptions on the supply side. And that actually creates for a rather blurred picture, to be honest, in terms of the absolute impact. Now, we are guiding here, and importantly, for the full year outlook. And therefore, it's important to bear in mind that a lot of these effects are very difficult to fully predict how they're going to unwind. Hence, to the best of our ability, we feel this is the best outlook that we can give at this stage, remembering that it's, of course, very early in the year, and that we'll have to see how it all pans out overall. So that was relating to the pricing. And I'm afraid I didn't quite capture your second question on...
I'll try again. So the EBITDA leverage from your sales growth actually fell in Q4. It wasn't a dramatic change, but it was nevertheless a decline. Obviously, you got more pricing, so you'd expect to see more leverage in Q4. That was really my puzzle as to why you're not seeing a bit more on your margin, basically.
I mean, I have to say, we don't usually run the business on a quarterly basis. And what we're seeing in Q4 per se, there can be a number of adjustments going on there, going through. Now, of course, the thing that we drive towards is annual performance, and what we're seeing is a clear trend, and we landed at 18.9, which is, you know, very much middle of the range that we guided for. Now, the exact movement quarter on quarter, we wouldn't particularly split out, to be perfectly honest there. So there isn't an element that I would particularly highlight at this stage with that respect. In terms of the margin year on year, of course, it's still a step up, right? Because we've gone from 18% in Q4 last year to 18.7, and you do have seasonality that plays into that. So quite a few.
Yeah, so I suppose I was just wondering if there's any one-off costs, you know, anything when you have a sudden surge of volume growth, are there any one-off costs that you have to incur? That was, I suppose, the question.
Yeah, no, there's nothing that we should, you know, that's worth mentioning as an individual effect.
Okay, great. Thanks, Geraldine.
Welcome.
The next question comes from Ms. Stephanie Bothwell, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. Just three quick points of clarification again on the guidance, if I may. Just on the 100 million positive benefit on pricing, just to confirm, that indeed includes all of the three benefits, both temporary and from your own initiatives. The second one is on the 80 million for FX. Just to confirm, that's on the translational benefit on top line, and wouldn't factor in anything with regards to transaction exposure on your cost base. And the third point is, just given the very strong organic growth that you are seeing, is current CapEx guidance, so up to the 550 million euros, still the relevant number we should be looking at, or should it be something higher? Thank you.
Good morning, or Stephanie. So firstly, to your question of the clearly above 100 million guidance, that includes all three elements, partly for a very pragmatic reason, which is that it is not at all an easy task to try and separate out in a hugely accurate way the different pieces. Even if we were, you know, attempting to do that, it would be a difficult exercise. Plus, of course, it's a full year outlook. So that is all in. Now, in terms of the 80 million FX, this is really the total EBITDA impact of FX. So in there, you've got translation and transactional. And what we do is that we partly hedge ahead some of the transactional exposures, and that results in our best estimate at this stage of 80 million, knowing that we have assumed, in order to, you know, to do this sort of rule of thumb calculation, a dollar at around 1.22 to the euro and a Swiss franc at 1.15, knowing that there's, of course, a lot of volatility around these days on FX. But that is our current view of how that would impact our bottom line in total. And as for the CapEx, so what we did when we started the strategy, we said we would probably land between 500 to 550 million per year on average during that period. Now, in the first year of the plan, we were actually below at 475. This year, we are sort of within that range at 545. And I have to say that next year, we guide towards a bit of a higher number, more probably around the 600 million, due to, in part, the organic growth, but also the timing of certain CapEx projects, some of them acquisition-related, and others, particular projects that we are doing. So you should think of around 600 for the year 2018.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Mr. Neil Tyler, Redburn. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. Three from me, please. Firstly, just back to the guidance. Previously, you've applied the group EBITDA growth guidance, been very specific that it applies to both divisions. Presumably, that's not the case this year, but I just wanted to get your take on that and on whether the previous high single-digit EBITDA growth guidance still applies to the materials division. Second question, if you can help us with the volume effect in the fourth quarter of the emergency spot sales, whether you've got a quantification around that you can help us with. And then finally, you mentioned in human nutrition the 40% of products figure. Can you give us a sort of comparative, say, 2 or 3 years ago, how that looked within the product portfolio in the human nutrition division? Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, shall I take the first? So in terms
go
of...
Go ahead. Pike is also here, but I am... go ahead, Sheldon.
Okay,
go
I'll
ahead.
Go ahead. Okay. Neil, good morning. So in terms of the guidance, that is a fair comment, because indeed the guidance of high single digits to double digits is really more relevant for nutrition than it is for materials. And as you can imagine, of course, that does take into account our best estimate of the current pricing environment. It is important, however, to maintain the fact that our materials business is keeping its very good momentum. And as you saw, its results this year are excellent. And we don't see any slowdown in our materials businesses, but this overall guidance of high single into double is driven by nutrition. So that is a very fair clarification. Now, in terms of the emergency or, participating somewhat more in spot sales in Q4 to meet a demand on the market, to actually split that out is also quite a task. So here what we would say is that if you look at the overall pricing effect in Q4, it's made up of various elements that we tried to split out in our press release, which is that you've got the mix effect, both in animal and in human nutrition, actually, that is favorable. And then you have this on top of layer coming from a more a bigger activity in short-term contracts than we would normally have. But we're not splitting it out here.
It's more really to do with the volume effect of that, whether there's anything you can help us with on volume rather than price in terms of those emergency sales.
Again, it's a pretty difficult exercise to split it accurately, so I'm afraid that's going into probably a little more granularity Fine. Than we can provide here. And then your question on the 40%, as you know, this directionally is exactly where we want to be growing, which is to have solutions which are closer and closer to the customer in our human nutrition business. We are now quantifying it to being closer to 40%, which is a gradual evolution. Now, I actually don't have the percentage at hand if I to run it back, but remember that this is, of course, very much driven by the double-digit growth in eye health that has been a recurring pattern now for quite a while, but also the great success in our retail-ready solutions that has been also a repositioning and our attempt at addressing the somewhat soft market in North America in particular. So these were two very significant elements that are now gaining nice traction and are starting to be material. So that's what we wanted to highlight it here.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mr. Mutlu Gundogan, ABN AMRO. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, everyone. A few questions. Let me start with personal care and food specialties. I see that sales is up 28% in the quarter to something of 246 million. Can you tell me what drove this? The second question is on the associates. These continue to be better each quarter. Can you tell us where you stand in your divestment program? And then thirdly is on the animal side, on animal nutrition and health. You mentioned that you have a new ERP system at Tortuga, which led to additional sales. Can you explain me how that works? Thank you.
Good morning, Modu. Let me start with the last two, and then I'll hand over to Fiker. So in terms of the associates, as you know, from a directional point of view, we are aiming to monetize at some stage. Now, you're absolutely correct in highlighting that the performance has been a steady improvement, particularly for Chemica Invest, over the year with a strong quarter, and actually in Q4 is the first quarter that we recognize our share of the earnings, so we've gone out of negative equity there, so a nice momentum, still some way to go, but that is heading in the right direction. And for DSP, it's been a very solid year, both in terms of growth and retaining the margin. So no clarifications on timing except the direction, and that is where we want to be heading with our associates. Now, as to the animal nutrition, there it's a very pragmatic thing. As you know, we acquired Tortuga a few years back, and I've often get comments about, you know, are you simplifying your ERP landscape, yes or no? Well, the good news is that we are bringing now Tortuga onto our ERP backbone, but it is a significant exercise. It is actually in itself the biggest invoicing entity in the company. And Brazil being Brazil, the way that things are done there is not standard. Therefore, what we actually informed our clients is we may actually have some production disruption because of the ERP migration. And in order not to cause any issues, we actually encouraged our clients to basically pull forward deliveries in order not to have any unhappy customers without product. Now, the good news so far, and I'll touch wood, because the big migration has taken place in January, it's gone pretty well, and we believe that other than the fact that there's also a production shut anyway to simplify the migration, that it's gone pretty smoothly, and we should be fine. But that is what we meant by this extra volume that you see in Q4 is very much, and you know Tortuga in Brazil in itself, they account for about 30% of our animal business worldwide. So that acceleration in Brazil on the export plus this effect is quite substantial in terms of the volume effect, on a, particularly on a quarter. So that was the explanation around the animal nutrition. And now, maybe if you could just run us through your first question was actually on personal care.
The first question was about the performance, I think, of personal care and food specialties. When I recap well, Mutlu, indeed, personal care showed good growth over the year, 6% organically. And basically in all products line where sun care, the filters are important part of our business, and skin and hair care. But also the aroma ingredients, to be honest, especially also in Q4, doing very well, obvious reasons. And food specialties organically around 3%. Could have been higher, but we had some capacity constraints during the year, especially in enzymes. We reported that I think during the year and working on further debottlenecking, so that could have been higher than 3%, but both are performing well.
Maybe as a follow-up, so 28% sales growth, can you confirm that? Because that would mean an acceleration of what you've seen over the whole year. So is there anything of a one-off element in there? So that would be the first follow-up. And then secondly, Geraldine, can you just tell me How many ERP systems do you still have within the company?
But we have a lot of ERP systems in the company, but we are connecting and harmonizing those, and we are not going for intergalactic one solution like many companies did, because that costs a lot of money and does not bring a lot. And what you are referring to, help me, because you seem to be aware about the specific sales forecast growth in 18 of food specialties and personal care, but that is not what we provide. We provide a double-digit EBITDA growth, which we showed, and we have continued underlying growth in all our businesses across the company. But help me, where you got specific... Yeah. Per segment forecasted growth in 18.
No, not so much 18, Feike, but if I back out your nutrition sales and I back out the human and animal nutrition sales that you report, I get to sales for the remaining businesses, which are personal care and food specialties. And there it seems, on my calculation, that your revenues are up from 192 to 246.
Well, we publish it exactly in the presentation to investors on page 13, what the sales is in personal care and food specialties. Eh? You don't have to calculate that back.
Yeah. Okay. Don't forget that there are other items that make up the total nutrition cluster. So I think by backing out, you're getting a twisted picture on those two businesses.
Understood. Okay, I'll take a look. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
On page 13 of the presentation to investors, you see, because we publish that only once a year, the total sales of food specialties and PC and aroma ingredients. So you don't have to calculate that back.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next question is coming from Mr. Lawrence Alexander, Jefferies. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I guess three questions. First, did you... I might have missed it if you commented on trends in omega-3, particularly is that platform growing at this point? Secondly, Feike, as you think about optionality for the business, are you open to larger scale JVs or asset swaps, or should we be thinking more in terms of just direct acquisitions? And then lastly, as you've been developing your premix strategy and moving closer to the customer, do you see any need to move to expand your portfolio outside of nutritional additives into functional additives as part of the food package that you offer to the customer?
Okay. Our omega-3 business is growing well. I think it's also mentioned in this quarterly press release, also in the fourth quarter, but also over the year, what do we call early life. Is doing well. That is our, let's say, former Martech business. But also, if you look to the other omegas for complementing multivitamins, etc., I think they do very well in the fourth quarter and the year. Optionality, and by the way, we are increasingly, a part of those businesses is what we call the B2B business, but a part is also the B2C business in iHealth, where we have also some of the health products, multivitamins, etc., introducing them also globally more into China. So it's both businesses. But overall, doing very fine. Opportunity, optionality, as you said, yeah, I think the company has all the means to grow at its own strengths. As we show, we grow faster than the markets we operate in. In animal health, in human health, in materials. So that is very strong, and in that sense we have future-proofed a little bit our business over the years, and we have positioned ourselves to harvest the potential. That was the whole strategy in 2015 towards 2018, to show that this company can grow. Now, I think we show that across all our businesses. EBITDA is also growing in all businesses, and if we look to 2018, and I assume we can continue with that, and we will update you on a capital markets day, but that we can continue this growth in the years to come. Secondly, we're working on a couple of big innovation projects. We mentioned those, Green Ocean, by the way, pretty much on track, Clean Cow and all that stuff. That is another growth trajectory. And then, of course, the balance sheet, which we have with further acquisitions. And we can never update you upfront on the acquisitions, which one or how big or how small or multiple small or one big or whatever. But you see, with all those things, do we have the capabilities and strengths to grow our company at our own strengths? I think quite a bit. Premixes or expanding, but also beyond nutritional products. Yes, we are already doing that. If you look to what we have done, especially in China, with our texturizing ingredients in pectin and other products, you see that we are expanding in all kinds of functional ingredients. So we see the space in which we're operating in, more in a broad sense in food ingredients and not only specifically nutritional ingredients. I mean, there are six big categories of products there, which varies from nutritional ingredients to texturizing to flavoring to preservation, processing and coloring. And nutrition is the predominant area which we operate in. But we see all of that as our space.
Perfect. Thank you.
The next question comes from Ms. Laura Lopez-Pineda, Baader Bank. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. First of all, can you maybe give us an estimated contribution that the bolt-on acquisitions made in 2017 will have in 2018, so in nutrition? Secondly, you also reported a significant improvement in your innovation division. Do you continue to see further EBITDA expansion in 2018? And maybe what was triggering this significant improvement? In materials, you were again able to keep margins above 17%. And in the past, I remember that you also mentioned positive impacts from lower raw material costs, which is now it's not the case anymore. So you were able to pass on successfully higher raw material costs. What are your expectations for 2018 in terms of margins for the materials division? And the last question, last year you acquired a Amyris production facility in Brazil. Maybe an update or maybe what is the idea behind this acquisition? How long will you have to supply Nenter from this facility? And that's all. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Well, I think we will split these. So your first question was the bolt-on acquisitions. Indeed, during the year, we did a number of acquisitions. They're very different in nature, but overall, we estimate about an EBITDA contribution of about 20 million on a full year basis in the first years. So that's about a 20 million up on that. And maybe I will take the materials margin question. Very fair comment. If you remember, we had guided towards 16 to 17% for the year. We closed at 17.3%. And one of the clear trends that we were seeing was these increasing input costs were going to be a challenge during 2017. Now, the fact that we managed to close above 17% despite these input costs going up and actually a bit of a negative FX is really testament to the quality of the portfolio and how we've managed to grow in particularly our specialty parts of our portfolio, which give us more pricing potential in order to adjust to those environments. So that is very much what has been driven the 17.3% margin there.
Yeah. On the Innovation Center, indeed, we made a step up. Last year, we were roughly break even. This year we made a step up in EBITDA. You also know exactly, but I think we come from a couple of years ago with minus 40, minus 50 even, where we were in the Innovation Center. Last year break even, the year before, 16, and last year 9. In the 9, there were a couple of millions one-timers. We mentioned that also. So you need to correct that, and it's a little bit lesser than that 9 on an underlying continuing basis. And compared with that underlying continuing basis, we will for sure make a step up also in 2018. But especially also the years to come, biomedical is growing well. Our forward joint venture is performing better every month, and also the solar activities. On Ameris, we took a stake in Ameris because we believe that biotechnology in several of our product ranges plays a very important role. They are top-notch in certain areas of biotech, so therefore we took a stake and entered into a collaboration, a technical collaboration with them on R&D. And on top of that, we took over the Protas facility and some technologies in Brazil, especially on farnesene, because that is a raw material for several end products, and we want to have the technology in that field. Indeed, and then we added also further fermentation capacity to our company, in this case in Brazil. And on top of that, indeed, the facility is supplying several companies, amongst others the company you mentioned, and we, of course, respect all supply contracts we took over and we deliver.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Next.
The next question will come from Mr. Patrick Lambert. Raymond James, go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. Congrats for very good Q4. Three questions for my part. I think the first one will if we could get some update on those big projects. I think aquaculture in particular should start to get some contribution in 18, but also stevia. If you could comment where you are, I know before the capital markets they may be a bit difficult, but if you could update us on where what strategy you have in terms of implementing the introduction of those projects. First question. Second question for Geraldine, I think on the restructuring program. If I'm correct, next year you expect incremental about 85 million euros EBITDA contribution, or at least cost savings. Is that correct? And if you could help us also on the timing of those, is it again a bit more H2 driven, or those measures have been taken during 17 and should contribute pretty much all year? That's question number two. And question number three, again on vitamins. If I look at your comments on this superior 100 million euros benefit from pricing, I would assume that still vitamin E and A are the major contributor to that. And that in my calculation would mean that your average realized price for this vitamin should go up at least like 2 euros per kilogram for vitamin E. I know roughly, is that the correct way of saying it? And especially in if you could remind us of your turnaround in vitamin A in H2. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Let me start maybe with the program's question. So indeed, as we disclosed here in the press release, we were very happy that we closed the year pretty much on track with 195 million run rate end of 2017. Now remember, this is the cumulative figure versus the baseline of 2014. And you correctly calculate probably about 80, 85 million additional run rate by the end of 2018. Now, I'm always quite specific here that these are the gross savings, and it's the run rate end of year. As for the impact, in the same way as 2017, it was a gradual entry. This will be gradually coming through the year. But it's indeed resulting from actions which are already in place, so it's not that we're bringing something new. And maybe worth pointing out that this is predominantly relating to the nutrition improvement programs, because the bulk of the work done on the functions has now been done as part of the run rate at the end of 2017.
So that's the progress on the programs.
Yeah, on the programs, we gave an update. You might look it up during the last Capital Markets Days. And what we have done over the recent years is that we focused more on a couple of bigger projects. And Green Ocean, the joint venture also with Evonik, is a big one. Clean Cow is a big one. Niara, the recyclable carpets, is a big one. Stevia, etc. So we listed all of that. If you look to the EBITDA contribution, we should not expect a big EBITDA contribution of all of that in 2018. It most likely will start, but that will be modest in 2019. And then you will see a clearer EBITDA contribution in 2020 and further. So this whole will start in 2019. This is also the way we steer the company. We said in 2015 we want to have high single-digit growth of our business in materials and in nutrition across the company, mainly by underlying volume growth, because that is growing with the markets, gaining market share, serving our customers, and sometimes with pricing, depending on the pricing environment. That is one. Second driver of growth is that at a certain moment, those innovation products will come on top of that, which they will do towards 19 and 20. And of course, certainly, you know our balance sheet, we can further grow also via acquisition. That is the growth trajectory. If I come back on 2018, we will continue our underlying growth. And that is important. I think since 2015, we're showing that in animal health, in human health, and in materials, we show a good underlying growth, also volume growth. We will continue that. On top of that, Geraldine said we have a saving also next year, of this year in 2018, on the cost side. On top of that, we have a headwind of the currencies, clearly, and Geraldine quantified that one. And on top of that, we have the pricing effect, which is partly due to all our own commercial actions, and that shows also in our volume growth, partly due to the changes in China structurally of nature, blue sky, etc., and partly temporarily. Now, I understand what you want to do and to say, okay, the temporarily effect is maybe more AE related. I understand your remark. And then you try to calculate. On the calculation, I fully understand we all want to calculate exactly times volume and prices, etc. What we try to do today is to update you, well, that whole pricing arena, partly our own actions and certainly partly temporarily, and let's not go into the exact split of that, is above, clearly above 100 million. Good. Having said so, I would like to put one warning and word of caution of using Feed Info as a reference. I know that many of you are doing that, and I understand that. But the quantities that Feed Info is measuring at this moment are very small. So you can see big deviations of what companies invoice sometimes and what is there, because the market is tight, obviously. So it does not have to represent the exact market price. You know that we normally do not deliver on spot, but more on the longer term. And also that part, which is influenced by outages, I don't want to speculate too much on who is back when, etc. I think that would be not ethical either for me to do so when we're trying to serve our customers in the best possible way. And it is also not in a commercial interest for us to go deeper in that. And therefore, we sought to give you some guidance. Let's say this is clearly above 100 million. And on top of that, we have given you guidance for the full year for the total company, moving somewhat up from high single digit to double digit, as we said. So all of the above elements I said will result into a double-digit growth, somewhat up from the high single-digit. And with those elements, we hoped that all of you can make your analysis.
And just to make sure, your turnaround is still valid for Is it A and E in Q3?
Yeah, most likely in H2, but I think Q3 will be an important one. Yeah, correct.
Okay,
we're approaching now. We're almost at 10, so we have to round off. Gildine, will you make a few closing remarks?
Yeah, very briefly. So thanks, Dave. Thanks all of you for your time this morning. In short, with a strong performance in Q4, we concluded an excellent year for DSM, in which we significantly exceeded our Strategy 2018 targets. For 2018, we remain, you know, relentlessly focused on our operational and financial performance through the growth initiatives, through the completion of the improvement programs, anchoring the benefits of those, and to make sure that we continue under our own steam to grow above market in line with our ambitions for the Strategy 2018. And with that, I thank you all. Dave.
Okay, thank you, Gildine. Thank you also, Feike. This concludes our conference call for today. Thank you very much for your attention and your questions. If you have any further questions or need background information, you could know where to find us. And with that, I hand the call back to the operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude the DSM 2017 Annual Results Conference Call. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you.